My favorite way to unwind and dive into something more fun is June's Journey. The game lets me channel my inner detective and unlock compelling stories, strong female characters, and a mystery I want to solve. If you like true crime podcasts, it's the perfect game to play along while you listen. The Hidden Object Mystery Game will put your detective skills to the test in the roaring 1920s. You play as June Parker as she tries to solve her sister's murder and along the way uncovers family secrets. Chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. Mystery, danger, romance, all await you if you download the game now. I'm on chapter 4 and wondering how these clues will help me crack the case of who did it and why. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. If you love Snapped, Women Who Murder, you're going to love listening to true crime or mystery titles on Audible. The audio title I'm diving into again is one of my favorites to revisit, Mindhunter by John Douglas and Mark Ulshaker. Even if you think you know the details of the cases, former FBI unit chief John Douglas took on from documentaries or the scripted show, the audio title goes above and beyond in bringing you along with him in his career, trying to catch serial killers and serial perpetrators. He used psychological profiling to dive into the minds of notorious criminals. The title includes his hunt for a killer in Alaska, the Green River Killer, and so much more. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. It is the home of storytelling, after all. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/snapped or text snap to 500-500. That's audible.com/snapped or text snap to 500-500.
They were a charismatic couple that seemed to be on the brink of the perfect life together.
He loved his wife. He was crazy about her.
He was the happiest I've ever seen him.
Until a harrowing discovery shatters their future.
911, what are you reporting?
I found a deceased person.
Ankles were still duct taped together, duct tape on each wrist.
Detectives soon have an unexpected suspect in their sights.
She's active in her church, did a lot of work for the community. She helped people.
And a trove of long buried family secrets suggests there's more to the murder than meets the eye.
Suspicions about an affair.
Any reason why he would be out at your guys' place?
I really don't have any idea. I can't think of a logical thing that makes sense.
He lost control. It just got out of hand.
Detectives will soon discover that some family secrets can have deadly consequences.
That's really what did it. That's what pushed her over the edge.
I was
screwed
up, didn't I?
State of shock. Why? I just didn't understand it.
July 12th, 2012. It's just after 8:30 p.m. in Gig Harbor, Washington. A local couple is walking their dog, Daisy, down a quiet, tree-lined road.
You know, it's kind of a rural street. You know, it's trees and shrubbery kind of along the both ends, a little marshland off the side of the road.
The dog went off into the brush a little bit, and they went to go see what the dog was after. And that's when they discovered a body.
Just a few feet off the road, they see the body of an African-American male.
911, what are you reporting?
I found a deceased person.
They thought initially it was a hit and run.
Okay, and you believe that he may have been hit by a vehicle or something? I'm just speculating because he's laying in a low-lying swamp area.
First responders from the Pierce County Sheriff's Department rush to the scene.
When I went out into the brush and took a look at the body, the first thing that I saw was that he had white duct tape around his wrists, around his ankles and face, his nose and eyes area. It was obviously some sort of a homicide. It wasn't hit and run. The patrol deputies had already secured the area. I called for our forensics unit.
Pierce County law enforcement begins scouring the roadside for clues.
We located his wallet out in the brush right next to his body. We found some identification in there.
The victim is identified as 33-year-old Leon Bockham.
Once we identified who he was,
we were trying to find out whatever information we could get about him, set down some sort of a timeline in relation to how long he had been there.
As investigators peel back the layers to this mystery, they'll unmask a killer that no one in this tiny tourist town could have ever imagined.
Gig Harbor, this is not the kind of place where people expect bad things to happen.
Born in 1978, Leon Bockham grew up in a tight-knit family in the nearby city of Tacoma.
Leon was our first child, and his sister was born 15 months later. So they were pretty much raised like twins.
We spent a lot of time together. I mean, every summer we were gone somewhere. We went to camps, we went to Disneyland, we went to, you know, we'd go swimming, all kind of stuff.
He was very close with his sister, Rachel, but his grandmother was his rock. There was a big part of what drove him, you know, was to make her proud.
Not only did Leon have an unyielding drive to succeed, he had the brains to back it up.
He was super intelligent. As soon as he got into something, he wanted to know everything about it, and he did whatever he could to learn it.
He kind of had this presence about him where people, he kind of just commanded respect.
Leon's confidence served him well in 2001, when 23-year-old Leon began dating 21-year-old Yumiko Roberts.
Miko is a very gorgeous woman, and she just had this magnetic personality. People would just want to hang out with her, and she attracted a lot of attention.
Leon was convinced he'd found his soulmate. For Yumiko, a struggling single mother, Leon was just what she was looking for.
Any girl's gonna wanna be with a guy that they can feel safe around. I think that's what initially drew her to him.
She was ready to settle down, you know, and he was ready to settle down. She had already had a kid and, you know, just ready to start a family.
He was so proud. He was like he had hit the jackpot, you know? I could just see the look on his face.
As their love for each other grew, Leon quickly took over the role of being second parent to Yumiko's son, a role that Yumiko's mother, Jackie Ray, had been filling for the past year.
You could just tell that Jackie and Miko were very, very close.
Jackie did everything for her. She was very protective of her.
Having Jackie by her side was a blessing for Yumiko, whose struggles as a single mother began when she was a teenager.
She went to college at University of Las Vegas. She was there for about, I think, 2 years, and then she got pregnant with her son and came home.
The boyfriend has left her, and this is when Jackie steps in.
Jackie was basically raising that child until Leon got in the picture.
She's very giving. She does a lot for, like, the people that she loves.
When Yumiko married Leon Bockham in 2008, Jackie supported her daughter every step of the way. By 2012, Yumiko and Leon had two more children of their own.
Jackie did a lot of caretaking for the kids. Like, she would babysit the kids a lot. You could tell that she loved her grandkids, for sure. Like, she was always around, always giving them what they need.
Jackie's help at home with the kids allowed Yumiko to be a successful working mother.
She wanted to get out of the house, so she started working customer service for a cable company.
Yumiko had stayed home with the children, and he had been the sole breadwinner of the family. And so when she was working, they were in a good financial spot.
But on the evening of July 12th, 2012, their picture-perfect family is ripped apart when Leon's body is found off a rural road in Gig Harbor, Washington.
When we found him there, it was obvious that he'd been there for a few hours. My next step was to try to figure out who would want to do this.
A closer look at the body gives detectives more insight into their victim's final moments.
Leon had been shot once. The entrance wound was in the upper back. That led me to believe that he was shot during some sort of a scuffle. Whether this was an intentional gunshot wound certainly wasn't an execution. We knew that he had been dumped because we have drag marks through the brush.
There is little at the scene to indicate where Leon might have been killed or who might have killed him. When it comes to collecting evidence, Investigators find themselves grasping at straws.
We had found three styrofoam packing peanuts near his body. We found a Dora the Explorer card. We had collected all those as evidence. Didn't know if it was just trash alongside the road or it might be related somehow to how Leon ended up here.
As investigators continue to work the scene, a patrol deputy knocks on the front door of the Bauckhams' residence in nearby Puyallup, Washington. Leon's wife, Yumiko, answers.
She was told by the patrol deputy that Leon had died. I had specifically asked them not to give her any information about how he died.
Coming up, Yumiko unearths some skeletons from the past, which leads detectives to a potential suspect.
She's being secretive with her phone, hiding the messages and stuff like that.
There was quite a bit of conversation leading up to Leon's time of death.
He lost control. It just got out of hand.
On the evening of July 12, 2012, 33-year-old Leon Bauckham's body was found along a remote stretch of road in Gig Harbor, Washington. Investigators are now at the scene trying to make sense of Leon's death.
We knew that he had been dumped because the duct tape on his wrists were broken. It appeared to me that whoever had drug him out to the brush had drug him out by holding onto the duct tape around his wrists.
Upon hearing of her husband's death, Yumiko breaks down.
She becomes distraught. She is very upset.
Once she collects herself, Yumiko notifies the rest of her family of her husband's death.
Yumiko called me. She says, they found a body and they believe that it's Leon's. I said, what? Then I immediately hung up the phone and I was bawling my eyes out.
My sister tells me, they found Leon, and he's dead. They found his body, and that's the last thing I remember. I couldn't believe it. I didn't understand what happened. I certainly didn't think murder.
Though it takes Yumiko longer to reach her own mother, Jackie Ray, who is vacationing with her husband, Lathaniel, 200 miles away at a place called Moses Lake.
Jackie's response is, I have got to get home immediately. But there's a storm, and there is no possible way that we can get home.
While stunned family members try to make sense of the unfolding tragedy, Detective Mark Murad arrives at the Bauckhams' residence just before 3 a.m.
When we went to the house, we sat down with Yumiko. We talked to her about her whereabouts, whether they were having any relationship problems at the time.
Through her tears, Yumiko admits that while she loved Leon, in recent months, they'd hit a bit of a rough patch. According to Yumiko, it all started when she went back to work.
She had been home for so long and hadn't been out, and now she's out and she's getting all this attention. She's a beautiful girl.
The way she dressed was very provocative, and Leon didn't like it.
Yumiko felt like Leon was a little, you know, she felt like he was controlling.
So apparently Leon installed a tracking app on Yumiko's phone, something that would allow him to see her location on his phone. And he had had that on her phone for some time. Yumiko was aware of it.
Yumiko says she tolerated Leon's jealousy because she was sure it would eventually subside. However, a few weeks back on May 30th, things took a much darker turn.
They were having a discussion and then it just kind of escalated.
It just got out of hand. And he ended up putting his hands on her.
He had allegedly punched her in the eye. She said that she had fractured her eye socket during that incident.
When Miko's mother, Jackie, found out what happened, she immediately notifies police.
When you have a domestic violence problem, the court automatically gives you a temporary no contact order.
Yumiko tells police that she and her husband were trying to put the incident behind them.
We're trying to work on it. We're trying to repair it. Hopefully, you know, we can get this restraining order, you know, lifted. He was staying at the house. Not every day, you know, but he was staying at the house a lot.
Yumiko tells police that Leon had stayed at the house the night of July 10th. The next morning, though, Leon's extreme jealousy returned.
She had dressed up too much to his liking to go to work. There was an argument over how she was dressed, and she ended up just leaving, going to work.
When Yumiko's shift was over, she was still angry from the argument and decided it was time to put some real space between her and Leon.
While Leon was working the night shift, I afforded Yumiko the opportunity to pack some clothes for herself and the kids and leave and go to the hotel up in Federal Way.
According to Yumiko, she checked out of the hotel that next morning and returned home with the children.
Yumiko tells police that she assumed that Leon had spent the night of July 11th at his grandmother's home in Tacoma.
There were times that he would stay with his grandmother because he had a fear that he might get caught with Yumiko at the house in violation of that no contact order.
But there's one detail that's troubling investigators.
When we were talking with her, not once through the entire interview did she ask where we found him or how he died.
It's a detail that certainly raises a red flag for detectives.
It may be possible that Yumiko was lying, because in a murder investigation, you always look at the people closest to the victim.
When police visit Leon's grandmother, she tells detectives that Leon was supposed to stay with her the night of the 11th, following the fight with Yumiko.
She told us that Leon had called and said that he was going to spend the night. When she got up in the morning, she saw that Leon wasn't there. His white SUV wasn't out in the parking lot.
However, Leon's grandmother says that when she returned home later that day, his white SUV was in the parking lot, but Leon was still nowhere to be found.
Somebody had to have brought that car back and parked it in the parking lot because he was dead.
The revelation suggests one thing. Leon Bockham probably didn't die at the hands of a stranger.
Whoever killed him obviously knows where his grandmother lives.
The following morning, investigators reach out to Leon's family, who provide them with even more details about the couple's rocky last few months, including what had truly sparked Leon's rage the day he struck Yumiko in the face.
He had suspected that she was having an affair with somebody at work.
She's being secretive with her phone, text messages at certain hours, you know, hiding the messages and stuff like that.
He'd gotten a phone call from someone that worked there and said, Leon, you need to come and check on your wife because something's going on here that's not right. So Leon shows up and talks to the guy. And the guy basically says, I know she's your wife, but I don't care.
According to Leon's family, shortly after that confrontation, he found racy messages from the man on his wife's phone. And that's when he lost it.
That's when he slapped her.
If Yumiko is having an affair, that is definitely going to add to the suspicion that she had a hand in her husband's murder.
I had a pretty strong suspicion she was somehow involved.
Coming up, a new observation leads detectives down a different path.
He was found within a mile of her house. That was a huge red flag.
And a new witness comes forward.
We received a call. He wanted to give us information.
She's too upset, so she wants to talk in person.
Hey, Snuff listeners, with the weather getting warmer, it's time to swap out those jackets and thick sweaters and say hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my capsule wardrobe with classic, well-made staples without breaking the bank. Luckily, I found Quince. They offer a wide range of timeless pieces that will look chic and last. I, of course, went straight to the bags, like the Italian pebbled leather sling bag and the classic Italian leather tote in dusk blue. The colors are perfect for every day, and both are made with quality materials. If the same bag was sold by a different designer brand, it'd be so much more expensive. And Quince doesn't sacrifice the quality despite being priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands too. I can't wait to use my sling bag for any time I'm on the go, running errands, and bring my leather tote bag to work. They're both bags that go with any outfit, and honestly, any occasion. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/snap for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/snapped to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/snapped.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. You hear that? That's the sound of another sale with Shopify, your go-to for selling everywhere, online, in-store, and even on social media. Shopify POS is like the central hub for your retail operation. From payments to inventory, it's all there. Got different gadgets? No worries. Shopify's hardware is adaptable, fitting in just how you do business. Start transforming your retail business with an incredible offer. A trial for just $1 per month at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/wondery. Take the leap and upgrade your point-of-sale solution with Shopify. Visit shopify.com/wondery and start your trial today.
Less than 48 hours after 33-year-old Leon Bockham's body was found, dumped in a remote corner of Pierce County, Washington, investigators wonder if Leon's troubled marriage to his wife, Yumiko, may have been the catalyst behind the murder.
We had learned later Leon had some suspicions about Yumiko having an affair.
Yumiko adamantly denies any affair had taken place.
It just kind of escalated and just out of anger. And, you know, definitely not a good move, but he did hit her.
When investigators scour the domestic violence report related to the incident, the location on the report immediately piques their interest.
The address that he had been arrested at for the domestic violence was Jackie and Nathaniel's house, his in-laws.
When the investigators look into the proximity of Jackie's residence to where the body is found, then it becomes interesting.
We thought that was a little suspicious that he was found just a mile from their house. At that point, we wanted to talk to everybody that was involved in that domestic violence incident.
Investigators ask Yumiko's mother, Jackie Ray, and her husband, Nathaniel, to come down to the station. They sit down with Jackie first.
We're investigating the death of Leon, and just kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit, help us try to resolve this.
Jackie tells detectives that in the aftermath of Leon's assault on Yumiko, she'd witnessed a side of her son-in-law that she'd never seen before.
It was kind of unreal. I mean, pacing like a caged animal, back and forth and yelling and screaming.
She didn't have a whole lot of nice things to say about Leon. I wouldn't be happy if my daughter was involved in a relationship with somebody who was abusive towards her, so that it was completely understandable.
Jackie says her opinions about Leon have been strongly influenced by her past experiences with abuse.
She had Yumiko when she was a teenager. She becomes dependent on a man with a temper. He eventually becomes abusive.
Jackie eventually found the courage to leave Yumiko's father. Once she was on her own, Jackie worked hard to set a good example for her daughter, Yumiko.
She always instilled their grades were number one. Like, always go to school, like, work hard.
In 1993, Jackie went on a blind date with a forester named Nathaniel Ray. The two hit it off immediately.
They're looking for companionship. They're looking for somebody really to connect to. And it happens.
2 years later, Jackie and Nathaniel married. Like Jackie, it was Nathaniel's second trip down the aisle.
When they married, they just combined, and it was one big happy family. Then they had a baby girl.
The baby brought the couple even closer together. And though Jackie and Nathaniel worked long hours to make ends meet, the newly blended family of four seemed to be thriving. Given her own troubled marriage to Yumiko's father years earlier, Jackie pleaded with her daughter to walk away from Leon. Advice Yumiko apparently ignored.
She took him back.
Jackie claims that at first, Leon seemed to embrace his second chance. But over the past few weeks, his behavior had grown erratic again.
It was more the last month or so than ever. But yeah, he would be okay, and then he would just be kind of crazy.
For Jackie, it all came down to one word, control.
He was jealous over nothing.
What about this friend that started all this? Is he a potential threat? Maybe somebody would do something like this?
I don't think so.
Detectives then turn their attention to the location of Leon's body.
Any idea why we'd find him where he was? Anybody he knew out there? Anyone socialized with?
According to Jackie, she and Lathaniel weren't even in town when Leon's body was discovered. They had been camping with friends almost 200 miles away at Moses Lake since July 10th.
That's when Jackie disclosed that she and her husband didn't drive over together to go camping, that she had stayed home. She talked about some errands she had to run.
Jackie tells detectives she planned to leave the morning of the 11th, but once again was delayed.
Miko calls Jackie and she says, Leon and I have had another fight. Jackie is distraught and she says, that's it, I'm fed up. I'm getting you a hotel room, gather the kids and get out of there.
Jackie told us that she had driven up to Federal Way to pay for the room.
Jackie says she spent a second night at home and then drove up on the morning of the 12th to join Lathaniel and their friends at Moses Lake. And that's where she was when Yumiko notified her about Leon's death.
I texted her and said, there's a thunderstorm. I'm going to wait till it passes.
When investigators interview Jackie's husband, Lathaniel Ray, he confirms the timeline of Jackie's statement and seems equally confused about how Leon's body ended up in Gig Harbor.
Any reason why he would be out at your guys' place?
I really don't have any idea. I can't think of a logical thing that makes sense for him to be out there.
After speaking with Jackie and Lathaniel, investigators inform them that they're free to go. But before detectives can corroborate their statements, they receive word that Leon's autopsy is complete.
I learned that Jackie was actually still in Pierce County during the time frame that Leon had been killed.
The medical examiner estimates that Leon was initially shot sometime between the night of July 11th and early the morning of July 12th.
The fact that she was in town still, the fact that he was found within a mile of her house, that was a huge red flag.
As detectives are poring over the autopsy results, they receive a call that sheds new light on the case.
From Ron Pratt, who's a close friend of Leon's. He wanted to give us information that would be helpful.
According to Ron, he had been on the phone with Leon the night police believe the shooting occurred.
Ron said that he had received a call from Leon on Wednesday and told him that he had been in an argument with Miko.
He's like, yo, like, you know, Miko's gone. She left me. I was like, you know, what happened? He's like, yeah, I don't know. He was like, she's just completely gone.
According to Leon, he hadn't been able to reach Yumiko all day, but that around 10:30 that evening, he received a call from his mother-in-law, Jackie.
Leon had told Ron that he had received a call from Jackie.
Yumiko, you know, wants to talk, but she's too upset to get on the phone, so she wants to talk in person. So I'm headed out to her house. I'm like, oh.
Because he had that tracking app on Amiko's phone, he could verify that she was, in fact, there. So that's the reason why he did go.
He got to Jackie's house. It's like right before midnight or just after midnight now. I'm like, okay, you know, just give me a call tomorrow because, you know, I'm going to crash and I got to work in the morning. So we got off the phone, and that was the last time we talked.
Ron was the person that was able to tell us that Leon, in fact, was going to Jackie's house. And now we have the reason why he was there, and it made sense. After talking with Ron on the phone, I was relatively sure Amiko and Jackie were at the house when Leon was killed, but I still had issue with the fact that it would have taken people of a lot bigger stature to be able to load him up into a vehicle, unload him, and actually drag him out into the woods.
Investigators subpoena Yumiko's cell phone records. What they find would seem to verify Ron's story that Yumiko was at her mother's house on the night Leon was killed.
We saw that Amico's phone was actually hitting off a cell tower in the north end of the Gig Harbor area, which would put her phone in the area of her parents' house. We had also learned from the phone records that Amico had been communicating with the coworker she was having an affair with. And there was quite a bit of conversation leading up to Leon's time of death. Then it kind of went quiet for a while.
Is it possible that Yumiko's lover provided the manpower mother and daughter needed to move Leon's body?
We did go and talk with Amico's coworker. He did have an alibi that he was at a movie theater in Auburn, which is about an hour, hour and a half away from where Jackie and Lathaniel live. His alibi checked out.
Yumiko's lover's rock-solid alibi throws a wrench into investigators' theory, but it's not the only one.
We had the conflict of Amico saying she was at the hotel in Federal Way, but yet her phone is at her mother's house. I did send a couple detectives up to the Comfort Inn to pull surveillance video and also check for who had registered for that room.
Hotel staff confirm that Yumiko was in fact at the hotel the night of the shooting. If that's the case, then why was Yumiko's phone at her mother's house when she was at the hotel?
Why would Jackie have Miko's phone? Miko's in a hotel out of the way. Jackie's husband is in a campground. If Jackie committed this crime, how could she have done it by herself?
Was she the one that actually had killed him? I didn't think so. So it kind of raised the question of who did.
Coming up, detectives get a break.
We had just been released from prison, literally weeks prior. Pretty violent background.
And some alarming answers follow suit.
He has walked directly into a trap.
They confronted him and he didn't surrender.
It's been nearly 2 weeks since Leon Bockham's murder, and police in Pierce County, Washington are convinced that his mother-in-law, 49-year-old Jackie Ray, is somehow involved.
I had a very strong suspicion. She knew exactly what the story was, but we needed a little bit more time to put things together.
Detectives subpoena Jackie's phone records. As they review her call log line by line, something catches their eye.
We saw that she had been texting with a phone number that we didn't know who that belonged to. She was discussing with this person that Leon was on his way over, asking this person to hurry up and get over there, and that person was responding back saying he was on his way. Our next step was to find out who the subscriber was.
While they wait for the phone company to provide additional info about the number in question, investigators continue their search for additional evidence.
We applied for a search warrant for Jackie and Lathaniel's house. And the following day, we executed a search warrant on the house. We searched the entire house. We didn't find anything really remarkable.
Before they leave, detectives take a look in Jackie's van.
But there was this cardboard box inside. Inside that box were the same popcorn-shaped packing peanuts that we had located by Leon's body. On the floorboard of her car, we also found a handful of Dora the Explorer cards.
While the discovery doesn't prove murder, it does connect Jackie to the crime scene, a fact detectives waste no time imparting to her.
I could tell that she was really nervous. I just kind of threw out at her that we had her text messages and we had talked with Leon's friend, Ron, and we knew that Leon was there at the house. Jackie startled me at that point. She looked at me and she said, "I didn't pull the trigger." So I knew she had involvement at that point. I just needed to figure out who that person was who actually did pull the trigger. We really didn't have enough to arrest her for murder at that point.
Thankfully, the phone company notifies them that they've identified the individual Jackie was texting, an ex-con named Lewis Barker.
Lewis Barker had just been released from prison literally weeks prior to this. We looked into his background. He has a pretty violent background and has had several run-ins with the criminal justice system.
Armed with new evidence, investigators request another sit-down with Jackie. She agrees, but only if the meeting can take place at her attorney's office. Before investigators can question Jackie about her connection to Lewis Barker, she starts in on her son-in-law, Leon, all over again.
It was a constant, almost every single day, she would call me and say, I can't do this, I can't sleep.
Jackie says in the days prior to Leon's murder, Yumiko had begun to fear for her life.
She was scared. She goes, what am I going to do, Mom? I can't do this. I'm going to go crazy. He's going to kill me.
Jackie says that Yumiko's fears came to a head when Leon allegedly brought up a painful chapter from Yumiko's past.
He was escalating to the point that he had said to her, or brought up the subject of her father.
Your ex-husband?
My ex-husband was somewhat abusive. I was able to get out of that situation, but he had remarried. He had three children and was in the midst of a divorce. He shot his wife and then he shot himself. He knew how sensitive she was to that. And she really thought he was crazy enough to do that. I thought he was crazy enough to do that.
Jackie says that's when she decided to reach out to an old friend of hers, Lewis Barker.
Jackie and Yumiko were friends with Lewis and Lewis's wife. They were close enough with each other that they knew that Lewis had just recently been released from prison.
He's from the neighborhood, and just I've heard that he just kind of was always in and out of trouble, you know?
Jackie told us she had contacted Lewis Barker, and she asked him if he would have Leon killed.
He wanted $10,000.
And did you agree to pay him $10,000?
I said I couldn't get it all at once. And I said, I can get you some, maybe more than half. And he said, that's okay, we can work it out.
Jackie subsequently made a withdrawal from her bank account for $8,000 and made the down payment.
Jackie says that on July 11th, she met Yumiko and Yumiko's children at the hotel in Fed Way. Jackie paid for the room.
Jackie told us she had taken Yumiko's phone while she was at the hotel, brought it back to her house because she knew Leon had placed that tracking app on the phone. Her plan was to call Leon to ask him to come out to the house to talk with Yumiko.
I called him eventually and said, do you still want to talk? And he said, yes. He specifically asked me, are you going to call the police? And I said, if you're going to stay calm, if you are going to leave, if I ask you to leave, I'm not going to call the police.
She knew that he would use the tracking app to verify whether she was there or not.
The original plan was to get Leon into that house, kidnap him, and take him somewhere else to murder him.
Once she was back in Gig Harbor, Jackie texted Lewis to let him know it was time.
She told us when Lewis showed up that there was another male there with him. She didn't know him and she had never met him before.
He was white or maybe a light Hispanic. I remember a hat and I remember a gray sweat jacket.
Were either of them armed?
It was had a gun.
The three waited until Leon pulled into Jackie's driveway around 11:30 p.m.
Leon knocked on the door. She opened the door, invited him in. Once he entered in the living room, that's when Leon realized that there were two people there waiting for him.
Leon has realized he has walked directly into a trap.
They confronted him and he didn't surrender. They had a gun and he lunged to fight back.
Jackie tells detectives she was too scared to watch what happened next.
She turned and walked out and went onto the back deck.
I heard yelling, scuffling. I eventually heard a shot. I heard Leon say, I'm sorry, I won't bother her anymore. I heard him moan. I don't know how long it went on, but then Lewis comes in and says, I need a plastic bag or something too, so that I don't get any blood in the car and I'm taking your car. And I said, okay. I gave him a tarp. I gave him the keys to my car.
With Leon clinging to life, Jackie, Lewis, and his accomplice used duct tape to bind Leon's wrists and ankles.
She watched as they packaged Leon up into the tarp and loaded him up into her car.
Jackie went back inside to clean up while Lewis and his partner dumped Leon's body in the marsh less than a mile away. Then, the two men returned to take care of one last detail.
They took Leon's Escalade back to Tacoma and dropped it off. She later withdrew some more money from a bank account to make final payment to him.
Before they conclude the interview, Jackie wants to make sure one thing is clear.
Jackie is adamant Miko knew nothing about this plan.
What finally pushed Jackie over the edge was that domestic violence incident. She had a fear that her daughter would be killed. She didn't see any other way for Miko to get out of this relationship unless he was dead.
Jackie felt helpless, not knowing what to do, like helpless for her daughter, didn't know how to help her daughter, scared for her daughter.
Following her confession, we placed her under arrest for murder in the first degree.
Word of Jackie's arrest quickly reaches Leon's friends and family.
Rachel just calls out of like one day and just she's excited on the other side of the phone. And all she's saying is, they got her, they got Jackie.
Coming up, detectives enlist Jackie's help to finish their case.
Why did you shoot him in the phone?
And Jackie's defense team drops a bombshell.
Should have stood up and said, you liar.
Investigators in Gig Harbor, Washington, have just arrested 49-year-old Jackie Ray for the murder of her son-in-law, Leon Baucom. In exchange for her cooperation with the investigation into Lewis Barker, Jackie is allowed to plead down to second-degree murder.
We had worked out a deal with her and her attorney that she would cooperate in a wiretap and have a conversation with Lewis Barker. Jackie arranged to meet Lewis at a restaurant.
Kind of screwed up, didn't I? He said this stuff never haunts you. I'm feeling a little haunted at the moment.
It'll get better in time.
Okay.
Yes.
Lewis told her, you know, just to relax, that everything would be fine.
Can I ask a question? You don't have to answer me.
You can't.
I mean, why did you shoot him in the head?
I guess. Lewis replied back to Jackie that that wasn't his intention, but he didn't know that Leon was going to put up a fight. That kind of sealed the deal for Lewis.
Lewis's statement is enough for a warrant. On August 10th, he is placed under arrest.
Lewis was compliant for the most part during the arrest. He invoked right away. He wouldn't talk to us. He wanted an attorney. But that was kind of par for the course with somebody with his experience in the criminal justice system.
Moreover, Lewis refuses to identify his accomplice.
The best description we got is a white male in his mid-20s. He's about medium build, average height.
At Jackie's sentencing hearing, Leon's family begs the judge to hand down the maximum sentence of 25 years. That despite the alleged assault, he didn't deserve to die the way he did.
What he did was not worthy of him being murdered like a dog.
Next to take the stand is Jackie's daughter, the victim's wife, Yumiko.
People are waiting to find out, is she going to support her mother, or is she going to lash out and say, you took the father of my children, you took my husband.
She told the judge that she was so fearful of her life throughout their whole marriage and relationship.
She really was trying to protect myself and my children.
I know that's your mother, but how can you stand there and defend someone that did that to the father of your kids?
Yumiko adamantly stands by her claims of long-term abuse from her husband, but Leon's family believes otherwise.
I should have stood up and said, you liar, and went to jail for contempt. Then allow her to stand in court and say that and get away with it.
Jackie's defense also claims that their client's abusive first marriage is further proof that a lenient sentence is in order.
Jackie says because she was a victim of domestic abuse, that was her defense. Battered wife syndrome.
However, the judge doesn't buy it. Jackie is sentenced to 18 years in prison. Lewis Barker pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. In November of 2013, he was sentenced to 34 years in prison.
Jackie doesn't deserve to be let out because she could have stopped it at any time.
She's older, and so even with that amount of time, her life is pretty much done anyway. I would have liked to see longer, you know, or to where she can't get out at all. With Lewis, I was okay with it.
Leon's family gets some satisfaction in seeing Jackie behind bars, but they must live with the fact that his murder leaves behind a complicated legacy.
He couldn't defend himself. All they could say, just slander his name and drag him through the mud. It was just horrible. It was horrible hearing it. It was horrible.
Who's dead today? She was never afraid for herself and her children. She did not live in fear, and her children never did. Leon was a good provider. He was a loving father, a loving husband.
I don't see any justification for what Jackie did. Absolutely none. I've never been able to find any.
The third individual involved in Leon's murder remains unidentified and at large. The investigation is ongoing. Jackie Ray is currently housed in the Washington Correction Center for Women in Gig Harbor, Washington. She speaks regularly with friends and family, including her daughter, Umeko.
For more information on Snapped, go to oxygen.com.
Hey, everybody, I'm James.
I'm Jimmy.
You definitely want to hear us on Small Town Murder, our crazy podcast about murder in small towns. Pretty aptly named. And what do you think of when you think of a small town?
Terrifying, a
diner? Terrifying murder. Exactly. Yeah. See, you know. And that's what we have for you. Chock full of it every week. We have two episodes a week, one regular on Thursdays and one express little shorter episode on Fridays where you're going to hear the craziest stories from small towns. We'll talk a little bit about the town to give you a setting, and then we'll get into some of the wildest, craziest murders you've ever heard of, mixing in some humor here to cut the darkness.
Keep it light.
Just a little bit and keep it light. You definitely want to join us there twice a week. You can't beat it. Come and join us. Small Town Murder Podcast. Subscribe today. Follow Small Town Murder on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Small Town Murder early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.